So we're ready to get started. We're holding by the Mishnah on Tzadik Gimel Amud.
Tzadik Gimel Amud
Bey? Tzadik Gimel Amud Bey is a Mishnah. On this topic of blood not just getting on clothing and having to be washed off in the Azara. So the Mishnah says, Nikas ala ur acholai hufshak, if it splattered on a skin of an animal before it was stripped off of the animal's flesh. Then Ainatoron Kibbus, then it doesn't require kibbus in the Azara because it's not Makabal Truma at that point. Mishahuf Shaton Kibus Divi Rabbi Huda. Rabbi Huda says once the skin was stripped off, then already requires kibus, because now the thing is, a skin, once it's stripped off an animal, it may be Mekabel Tumah or it may not. At that point, it depends what you plan to do with it. You could, for example, decide after it's stripped off the animal and still a raw skin, you could decide that you're just going to use it as is. You're going to use it, for example, as a mat. So that machshava is enough to make it be makabel terma. On the other hand, you could decide you plan to do something else with it. You plan to tan it. You plan to cut it up. You plan to whatever. And then in that case, it wouldn't be makabel terma. So Rabbi Yehuda says, once the skin is stripped off, then he will say that's ton kibbutz because there is a possibility where of it being Makabal at that point. If there's a possibility of it being Makabal Truma at that point, if the guy decides to use it as is for a man. So therefore, that makes it similar to a beggar. Rabbi Loza, I'm asking for Hufshat in a Torah Kibbutz. Rabbi Loza says no. Even after the skin was stripped off the animal, you still don't have to do kibbutz if blood splashed on it, unless he says, Rabbi Loza, that it has to actually be Makabal Truma. If the owner, Taka, decides that he's going to use it for a mat, sure, Rabbi Loza is going to agree that it's Makabal Truma, and being Makabal Truma, then it'll be subject to the same rules as a piece of clothing. But Rabbi Loza doesn't take the view that the owner could conceivably think of that. He says it would only have to be if you actually did think that. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda is saying it doesn't matter whether he actually thinks it or not. The fact that there's a possibility for him to think that is enough for it to have the rule of kibbutz apply to it. Okay. Mishnah continues. Einatone kibbutz elam mokam adam. You don't have to wash the entire piece of clothing or skin in this case or whatever. You don't have to wash the entire thing. Only the place where the blood actually splashed. And another criteria is that it has to be able to be makabel truma, which by the way, that says we said number one, you only have to wash the actual place where the blood splashed, not the whole baguette. Number two, we're saying that another criteria for the rule of kibbutz to apply is the beged has to be roi makabel truma. It has to be capable of becoming something that is makabel truma. Which Rashi points out, actually. Now, if the expression was makabel truma, then it would mean like Rabbi Lazar. Then it would mean like Rabbi Lazar, that it has to be something which right in its present state is capable of being makabel truma. But since the Mishnah instead uses the expression roi makabel truma, that it's something which is suitable to be able to be makabel truma, that tells us that the Mishnah is implicitly saying now like Rabbi Yehuda. Meaning, in other words, that we had a machloikus before between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Lazar. Now we have a stam Mishnah further on in the same Mishnah like Rabbi Yehuda, which would mean that on the face of it, that would mean that halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, but we'll get to that. So it has to be roi lekabel truma, but roi lekibbutz. It also has to be something which is capable of being laundered, of being washed, which means, in other words, we'll see in the Gemara what that comes to exclude. We know, therefore, it includes clothing, because clothing you can wash, you can do kibbutz to it, you can wash it, we'll say later on in the peretz, use water, use certain chemicals on it. There are other things where kibbutz, where the concept of kibbutz, of laundering it, is not relevant. And therefore, those things wouldn't require it. So the Mishnah says, what are things that require, what are things that are suitable for kibbutz, and therefore blood of chatas lands on them are going to require kibbutz. Echad abdeged ve'echad asach ve'echad aor tonim kibbutz, whether it's a piece of clothing, or a piece of sackcloth, which is made out of goat hair, or a skin. Now before we had in the Mishnah Machlokes about an unprocessed skin. But here we're talking about, let's say, a skin that has already been processed. Either we're talking about that the person decided to use it raw, without canning it, like as a mask or whatever, and then everybody agrees it's a kabbal terma, or we're talking about that he actually processed it. He actually canned it, he actually cut it to size, etc. So that kind of thing, tonim kibbutz, all those things require kibbutz. Because all those things, a beged and sackcloth and leather are all things that are subject to kibbutz. They're all things that the process of laundering is relevant to. Kibbutz for makam
kibbutz. Anything that can be washed is potentially...
Not anything that can be washed, because anything can be washed. Anything you can put underwater. The definition of kibbutz basically means the definition of kibbutz basically means that you're soaking it in water, you're rubbing it, you're bending it this way and that, you're agitating it or whatever in order to get out what was absorbed in it. As opposed to, let's say, for example, we'll see in the Gemara, if you have, let's say, if blood or anything else lands, let's say, on a wooden table, you don't do kibbutz, and you don't to put it in modern terms, you wouldn't put a table in the washing machine. And then in terms of those times, you wouldn't do the same kind of process to it that you would do to clothing. You would rather scrape off the blood. That's a different kind of process. That's not called kibbutz.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, yeah. And the Mishnah says, by kibbutz b'makom kodesh. This kibbutz, this b'makom kodesh has to be done in the azara of the Beit Hamikdash, as we talked about before. Okay, now the Mishnah digresses, or not really digresses, but from here the Mishnah is going to start talking about a related din, which also is mentioned in those sukkim, but which we're going to deal with later on, which we're going to deal with in more detail later on in the parak. Ushviras klei cheres b'makom kodesh. This that the Torah says that a klei cheres that was used to cook a chatas has to be broken. That also, the breaking of it also has to be done in a makom kodesh in the azara. Umeriko shkita between the choshes b'makom kodesh, and also this we said before that a klina choshes, a copper or other metal kavi that's used to cook a chatas has to be cleansed and scoured and rinsed and whatever. The morak b'shutaf b'mayim is the expression in the pasuk that also has to be done b'makom kodesh. That also has to be done in the azara. So those dinim about the shviras kli cheres and the merikol shnipo or whatever, that we're going to start talking about later. We're going to talk about a little bit before the next Mishnah, and then we're going to deal with it in more detail in the next few blocks after that. The Mishnah says, the machatas mikoshe kochin. Here you have a chumrah in a chatas as compared to any other kosher kochin. That we're saying, the concept that if blood of a chatas splashes on a beged or whatever, has to be washed in the azara, that's unique to a chatas. Because we said before, we learned before, zois teres a chatas, that it's a tera achas, v'chol a chatas, we said it applies to all chatas behema. We said not even chatas, but it certainly doesn't apply to as opposed to the other things, as far as shviras klichatas and meriko shifa klein choshes, so Rashi learns that actually the din of klicheres also only applies to a chatas. So according to him, you have two dinim that apply only to a chatas. And then you have one meriko shkifa that applies across the board to all korbanos. But in any case, when it comes to the blood, and according to Rashi, also the breaking of the klei cheres, there you have a chumra and a chatas over other kosher kachim, because the din of the blood definitely doesn't apply to them. According to Rashi, neither does breaking klei cheres. Other korbanos, if you cook them in a klei cheres, you don't necessarily have to break it. Which actually leads to a bit of discussion. Why shouldn't you have to? If the reason why you have to break them is because of the problem of noiser, because they can't be kashered after the noiser, then why shouldn't you have to break it with other korbanos? going to give a few different reasons. One of them being maybe with other carbonas. Minasota, after all, after 24 hours, the taste is pogrom. The taste that's absorbed into the container is pogrom. So Minasota, according to one opinion anyway, which is the halacha, missing timeless gam is butter. It's only the drabana that sometimes knows that timeless gam is awesome. So therefore, Minasota, if it were any other carbon other than a chassis, all you used to do is leave the keli unused for 24 hours, and then you'd be able to cook something else in it, as opposed to a keli that was used for kli chassis. The Torah insists, don't do that. You actually have to break it. That's one explanation. Another explanation is that with other carbonis, fine, you have the option. You're not going to be able to use it to cook other food in again because again the taste that it absorbs from the carbon is going to be nicer. But you don't have to actually break the keli. If you choose to keep around the keli and use it for something else, you could do that. Whereas with the chassas, the Torah insists that even if you're not planning to ever use it for anything else, you still have to break it. Okay, that's all. What?
You cannot use the pieces for anything.
Well, no, you could use the pastures, you could use the pieces, but I mean, you can't use it. You're not going to be able to use them to cook it because you can't cook on broken pieces.
No, but let's say you want to include the pieces in a piece of art or something like that. Could you do that?
Oh, yeah. I would imagine once you broke it, then yeah, you've done the mitzvah. Now you can probably do whatever you want with the pieces, I guess. In any case, all that is according to Rashi. There are other Rishonim, I believe, that Amnon, for example, says that the concept of Shavuot Kli Chayrus does apply to other Korbanos as well. So according to that, then the Zechomer of our Mishnah would be talking only about the case of the blood. All right. So the Gemara starts up. Menahani Mili. Where do we know this that we said in the Mishnah that the din of kibbutz applies not only to actual cloth, but also to not just to regular cloth, but also to sackcloth and also to skin. So where do we know that from? The Torah Rabbanon, because we learn in a Braisa, when the Pasuk says beged, the Pasuk says I should use a midama al beged. Yeah. The pasuk says I should use a midama al beged, that a lot of it splashes on clothing. So if you only have that, if you have a beged, you would only know that it means regular cloth. Minayim l'rabbis orishah hufshat, misha hufshat. How do we know that it also comes to include a skin of an animal after it was stripped off from the animal? Talmud by Asher Yizel Leha. Therefore, the pasuk has extra words in there. Asher Yizel Leha. This that it splashed on. Techavis makam kaddish, which dasher yizem midama means anything else that blood splashes on, not just a beged, but also for example skin.
Didn't we use dasher yizem for something else?
No, well we said no. What you actually have in the pasuk is we use the word yizem itself to mean that the blood has to be something that has not yet been applied to the mizeach and that's capable of being applied. Fine, but here we're learning more from the word asher. You were learning more from the word asher that it means anything that it splashes on than the chavis makam kaddish. Yochol shani marba orat shalai hukshat. So you would think in that case maybe we should include also a skin of an animal before it was even stripped off the animal. Now, Talmud Lama beged. Therefore, after all, the pasuk did specifically mention a beged. It didn't say it's the post in that case. If it meant that anything that it splashes on has to be at least kibbutz, then it wouldn't have used the word beged either. It would have just said, I should use a midyama all of techavis makam kaddish. The fact that the word beged means it has to be somehow similar to a beged. Ma beged haroy lekabot. So just like a beged, a piece of clothing, is something which is. So the same thing. Anything else that it splashes on has to be something that's capable of being Roy LeKabel Turma. Rabbi Yehuda, that's what Rabbi Yehuda says. And again, Rabbi Yehuda has said in our Mishnah that means it doesn't even necessarily have to right now be able to be LeKabel Turma. It just has to be that there's a possibility that in its current state it could be LeKabel Turma without needing anything else. Namely, again, it was a skin stripped off an animal where nothing else has been done to it yet. Nothing else has been done to it yet, but because you could have a machshava to just use it as is, then therefore we consider that it's potentially makabel truma. And therefore he says that's, in that sense, it's like a beggar. Rabbi Elazar. And Rabbi Elazar says, let's learn it differently. Beged, again, Emi al Beged. Fine, from the word Beged, you would only know that it means a Beged, an actual piece of clothing. Menayim Rabbi Sak B'chol Minim Pradim. How do we know that it also includes sackcloth and any other kind of, and any other kind of cloth? Now, usually, in the Torah, unspecified, when you have the word Beged in the Torah, unspecified, usually it means wool or linen. Usually it means either wool or linen. So, for example, for example, when it comes to tzitzis, where it says that you have to make tzitzis, I'll contribute dayhem, but there is some that I'm in fact learns that in the Torah, only wool and linen garments are chayv and tzitzis. According to him, everything else, like cotton tzitzis that people wear nowadays, for example, would only be chayv dirabanan. So that's the definition.
Well,
we know because we're in connection with Saraf, the Pasuk mentions that Saraf can happen to Beged Shemer or the Beged Tishrim in a garment of wool or a garment of linen, and from that we learn, there's a Dinyanav from that for all other places where it mentions Beged, that it means unspecified, that it means wool or linen. So over here, Rav Elazar says, well, how do we know that it also includes cloth made out of other kinds of fabric? For example, Rashi mentions silk and waste silk and whatever. Asher Aleha Techaves. Therefore, the Pasuk says, again, the same word asher that Rabbi Yehuda used, Aleha, whatever the blood gets on it, Techaves, it has to be washed. So that means, so Rabbi Yehuda has said that asher means anything that's with Tabal Tuma. Rabbi Elazar is saying it means any kind of cloth. Yachol shani marbe or vishur hushat. So then you would think in that case we should also include a skin of an animal after it was stripped off, even if it's not actually makabel tuma right now. Tamadlay mabeged. Therefore, Rabbi Elazar says. Therefore, it says beged mabeged dover hamakabel tuma. Now, beged is not something that's susceptible in the future of able to be makabel tuma. It's makabel tuma right now. Right now, if you have a beged and it were to touch something that's tameh, then it would become tameh. It doesn't matter your machshava or anything. A beged is a beged. So therefore, he says that by the same logic, therefore, if we're learning from the word beged, then the skin has to be similar to that also. It has to be something that right now is able to be makabel tuma, not something that could be makabel tuma if he has a thought of using it as it is. So, the Gemara says, "My benayu." Okay, so what's the difference between them? Now, over here, so Rashi mentions over here that this is Rashi. According to Rashi, this is one of the examples where the word "my benayu" doesn't usually in the Gemara. "My benayu" means a practical difference between the two opinions. Here, obviously, it doesn't mean that. We know there's a practical difference between them. According to Rabbi Yehuda, an unprocessed skin. Okay. Hi, Aaron.
Hi.
I think we lost Avram Moshe, actually.
I'm here.
Oh, you're here? Okay. All right.
Yep.
Interesting. All right. So let's continue. Okay. So we're in the where I'm starting Galad Amar Aleph, fourth line. So usually what's the practical difference between these two opinions? You obviously doesn't mean that. We know what the practical difference is. Rabbi Yehuda says that an unprocessed skin that blood of a chatas splashes on does need kibbutz in the Azorah, and Rabbi Elazar says it doesn't. So my benayu, Rashi understands over here, means what's the underlying argument between them? If Rabbi Elazar is saying we learn from Beged, where Beged is actually now able to be makabel tuma, not just that potentially it could be makabel tuma, whereas Rabbi Yehuda is saying that a beggar, that on the face of it, is saying that a beggar is something that only potentially could be makabel tuma, but not necessarily in its present state, then what's the actual difference between them? Where do you have a scenario where you have a beggar like that, and right now, it's not able to be makabel tuma, but based on something happening, it could become something that is makabel tuma? What would that be? Asking. Tosfos over here has a little more discussion. You can see there's a Tosfos that begins on Tzadik Gimel on the Beis and takes up also Tzadik Dalet on the Aleph too, that discusses the pros and cons of different possible Gersois over here. In Rabbi Elazar's part of the Braisa, are we saying that we're excluding a skin after it was stripped off, or are we saying that we're excluding a skin before it was stripped off? Which in that case, if we accept the guilt that Tosa says that we're talking about a skin before it was stripped off, Rebbe Elazar says you can't derive from this, then it comes out in the Braisa, at least there's not a great deal of difference between him and Rebbe Yehuda, because both of them agree that a skin that hasn't been stripped off, this din of kibbutz doesn't apply to, and in that case, that by benayim would mean the usual meaning. Where do you have a classical distinction between them? Okay, anyway. Amar Abaya, must chusam ishoder ikabinayim. So Abaya says, I'll tell you what the difference between them is. If you have a piece of cloth, Okay. All right. I think we have everybody back now.
Everybody back then?
Okay, so Abaya says, Abraham Moshe, maybe you can move your recorder a little bit further away from the phone because there's a lot of, it's feeding back to, yeah.
Is that better now?
Okay, yeah, much better, thank you. Matlas Chosam Isholish, the difference between them would be if you have a piece of cloth that's less than 3 exbois by 3 exbois. Now, it's like this. Usually, to be Makabal Tumah, a piece of cloth has to be at least 3 exbois by 3 exbois. Because, the Gemara talks about in other places, if it's smaller than that, if it's smaller than 3 by 3 exbois, usually a person is not even going to bother saving it to use as a patch. Like this, for example, a piece 3 by 3 exbois, a poor person might use it for a patch on his clothing. But if it's less than 3 by 3, he's not even going to bother. So usually, a piece smaller than that would not be Makabal Tumah. But you could have
that is the right of Rabbanan.
Nevertheless, if it's less than 3 by 3, a person could have a machshava about it and decide that he does plan to use it, that he does plan to use it as a patch or as an independent beggar or whatever, and then it is able to be Makabal Tumah. So that's the difference. Manda Omer Roy. So, Rav Yehuda, who uses the word roi in the Mishnah and in the Braisa, that it only has to be something that's able to be Makabal Tumah, well then, Honami roi. Well, this piece is also roi Makabal Tumah, because if the person thinks about it, I plan to use this small piece, of course, presto, it's Makabal Tumah. So therefore, according to him, that's considered roi Makabal Tumah. Therefore, he can say, I can draw an analogy from that, the same way as such a thing can be called a beged, and normally it wouldn't be Makabal Tumah, but he's able to make it be Makabal Tumah by thinking that plans to use it. The same thing, says Rabbi Yehuda, would apply to a skin that was stripped off an animal and not yet processed. The reason is the boy chishav alay, because if he wants, he could think, he could decide mentally that he plans to use the small piece of cloth for a patch or for an actual piece of clothing or what have you, and then it would be Makabal Tumah. Whereas Rebbe Elazar, who focuses on the fact that he says the comparison is with a beged that is Makabal Tumah right now, well, he will say, the fact of the matter is, this piece less than 3 by 3 is not right now capable of being Makabal Tumah. It could conceivably be made to be Makabal Tumah by him thinking about it, but unless he actually thinks about it, then it's not Makabal Tumah. So in other words, the difference is, according to the Bihoda, you have to have, we're talking about a piece of cloth, or in this case, we're talking about a skin, well, both, we're talking about a small piece of cloth or a small piece of skin, where even though right now it's not Makabal Tumah yet, but it's something that all he has to do is think about it being Makabal Tumah, and it's Makabal Tumah, and therefore the Bihoda says we can draw an analogy with that. We can draw an analogy between the piece of cloth and the piece of leather, and the piece of skin in the same way. Whereas Rebbe Elazar doesn't accept that concept. Rebbe Elazar says, I want a beged that right now is Makabal Tumah, without any further thinking or anything. And therefore, the same thing as far as the skin. So that's one way of understanding the machlokes of Rebbe Yehuda and Rebbe Elazar. Rebbe says, here's a different way of looking at it. Another way you could think about it, you don't even have to talk about a tiny little piece, less than 3x3. You could be talking about a regular size piece. But let's say, for example, that the person decided that he plans to embroider designs on this cloth. Now, again, the cloth is used as is, as a regular size piece of cloth a person could use as a piece of clothing or a patch or what have you. But you could also have that he decided. Now, in general, with the dinim of things being makabel tumah, the general rule is that it's only makabel tumah that you want to do in order to make it ready for use. So, for example, with a skin, only when you do everything with it that you would usually do to make it, that you plan to do basically to make it ready for use. So, for example, with a skin of an animal, usually tanning it, cutting it to size, and so on and so forth. In the case of a beged, you weave a beged at least 3x3 exponents, and itself, that's enough to be makabel tumah. But you could also have, conceivably, that you wove it and then decided, you know what, I'm not actually ready. Then you decide that as you're weaving it, you decide, you know what, I don't plan to actually use this as is once it's finished. I plan to first embroider designs on it. Well, then it's not makabel tumah until he embroiders the designs. So, same thing. Manda Omer Roy, so the Yehuda who says that we're talking about something that's Roy makabel tumah, where it's not makabel tumah yet, but it's capable of becoming makabel tumah. Same thing. Onami Roy. This one is Roy because he could change his mind. He could change his mind. He could decide he doesn't plan to embroider it. He plans to use the cloth as is, and at that point it is makabel tumah. So therefore, even before the embroidery was done, even if we're still at the point when he plans to do the embroidery, it's still Rabbi Yehuda would say it's ro'oi makabel tumah. It's something which is now able to reach a state where it's makabel tumah. Without any further ma'isa, such as actually embroidering on it, just a machshava, named where he changes his mind and says, forget about the embroidery, I'm just going to use it as is. As the Gemara says, because if he wants, he could decide, you know what, I decided before that I planned to embroider it, but now I change my mind, and now it's able to be a camel thumb. Is that Rashi mentions a point that you have when it comes to things being makabel tumah, it's kind of, it's easier to make them be makabel tumah than to make them not be makabel tumah. You have, for example, if something is already makabel tumah, even if it only became makabel tumah based on your intention, for example, okay, in this case, he wove the cloth and decided, I don't plan to do anything further with it, I don't plan to embroider it or anything, I'm going to use it as is, then it's makabel tumah. If he wants to make it not makabel tumah anymore, it's not enough to just think, okay, you know what, I changed my mind and I plan to embroider it. He actually has to do something with it. For example, I suppose in this case, that would be starting to embroider it. So Rashi points out the other way around is not true though. Something is able to become makabel tumah. I plan to embroider it. A machshava, you know what? Forget it. I'm not going to embroider it. Is enough to cancel that. But the reverse is not true. If he had thought I plan not to embroider it, and therefore it's makabel tumah now, then the only way to make it not be makabel tumah anymore would be to do some kind of ma'isa, not just some machshava. So it's a tricky point, but we need to keep it in mind that you can have a machshava to make makabel tumah, but then you need a ma'isa to take away that machshava. But you can have a machshava to make it not makabel tumah to begin with, and then another machshava to make it makabel tumah, and that will work. The second machshava will cancel out the first one.
Without a
ma'isa, exactly. Okay, so Rabbi Yehuda says, so here you have an example of that again. All you have to do is mentally decide, I don't plan to embroider this beged, and that's that. It's makabel tumah. So again, since we see, so fine, Rabbi Yehuda says the Torah is drawing a comparison with a beged, that's why it says, so Rabbi Yehuda is saying, fine, but you can have a beged, which is not yet makabel tumah, but is able, all that's missing to make it makabel tumah is a thought. So therefore, the same thing with the skin then. If you have a situation, if you have a skin where all you need is a thought, to make it the mecabal tumah, namely that you decide to use it as is without tanning it or without cutting it or whatever, then yes, then the same rules would apply. Man da'amad dabra, mecabal tumah, whereas Rabbi Elazar, who uses the expression, something which is actually mecabal tumah, that means that he says the same thing, right now, this thing is not mecabal tumah. Yeah, you're arguing that it's that all you need is a machshava to make it mekabel tumah. Very nice, but right now it's not mekabel tumah. That I hold is the kind of beged that the Torah is drawing an analogy with, something that right now is able to be mekabel tumah, without any maisa or without any machshava. Therefore, he says the same thing with the skin. In order for the din of kibbutz to apply to it, it would have to be something with no maisa and no machshava is needed to make it mekabel tumah. Something which right now is actually mekabel tumah, namely, therefore, so not just after it was stripped off the animal, unless he actually did already decide, I plan to use it as is. But if he hasn't decided one way or the other yet, then Rabbi Elazar says no kibbutz. Okay, so that's a second explanation. Rava Omar, then Rava says a third explanation. Now, it's kind of odd, because, I mean, Rava just gave an explanation. Why is he giving another one? You have a couple of different Yusoys over here. The Saras Hashas brings a Gears to Itta Damri. There's another version that Rava gave a different answer. So, according to this, you have the second answer. You had a biased answer. You had Rava's first answer, and then Itadami. Some say that instead Rava gave a second answer. There's other Gersoys that it's not Rava, but rather Rava or Ravina. Anyway, the Rava, or whoever it is, says, here's another way of thinking of the Machlokes. Utsba, if you have a piece of skin, an utzba is something that you lay down on the floor, Rashi describes. You lay down on the floor in order to eat on it, because in those times they usually sat on the floor, everything when they ate, like by a picnic, or to sleep on it. So it's usually it's made out of leather, but sometimes it's made out of cloth. So that's what an utzba is. An utzba is a spread that you spread on the floor. Maybe, I suppose it could also mean maybe that you spread it on a bed, whatever. The point is that
a mat.
Yeah, basically, kind of like a mat. Yeah, kind of. Yeah, that's what it is. But the choshev alav lekotz ikar b'nayu. The argument between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yehuda can turn on the question of an utzva where you decided that you're going to trim it to size. Now, the thing is like this. Usually an utzba, you don't need to trim it to size. You can use it as is. You can, think of it again. If we're talking like a blanket that you spread on the ground and sit on or to lay on or whatever, it doesn't necessarily need to be trimmed to a certain size and a certain shape or whatever. Any size, any shape that it's in will do. Well, not any size, I guess, but any shape that it's in will do. So normally you don't need to cut it to a specific size, but you could have a person who decided that he does plan to trim it to a certain size. So again, you have the same kind of thing where if he decides before he ever used it or before he decides that he plans to trim it, then it needs to be trimmed in order to be mekabel tumah. But basically the same similar idea to the other one. Manda Amar Roi, again, Rabbi Yehuda, who says that the key thing is that something is Roi with Kabbal Tumah, not that it's even Kabbal Tumah right now, but that all you need for it to be Kabbal Tumah is a Machshava, he would say, Honami Roya. Then, this one is Roi, because you don't even need to have it. Here he would say, it's kind of the reason why Rava, or whoever it is mentioning this example, is because this is kind of the opposite of the previous cases. The previous cases is the default. If he hadn't thought otherwise, it wouldn't be mekabel tumah. In the case of the makhlis putin, the shalosh hashalosh, for example, you have normally a piece of cloth, less than 3 by 3, is not mekabel tumah. It took a machshavah. What Rabbi Yehuda is saying is, you can take the view that if he thinks that he plans to use it, then there'll be mekabel tumah. Here it's kind of the other way around. Here what we're saying is normally an utzba is not trimmed. So therefore, kind of the default is that it's mekabel tumah. But here in this particular case, he specifically thought that he doesn't say that he does transit trim it. Therefore, we say he's not makabel trim until he trims it. And Rabbi Hoda is saying, what we do is, we kind of, what Rava is saying, Rabbi Hoda is saying, is we ignore that machshava of his. We say, fine, you have a machshava that you're only going to use it after you trim it, but you don't have to have that machshava. Conceivably, you could have used it without trimming, like most people do. And therefore, it's really the makabel trim. All that prevented it from being the Kabbal Tumah was that extra Machshava of yours. Well, Rabbi Yehuda says, we're going to ignore that Machshava. Manda Amadavra, I'm a Kabbal Tumah, whereas Rabbi Lazar says, if something has to, if the thing actually has to be a Kabbal Tumah, he says, okay, but the fact is, you did think that you're going to trim it. Halav Makabbal Tumah, Abim Makatala. The fact of the matter is, he did actually specifically think that he's not going to use it until he trims it. So similar to before, but again, the difference is before we were talking about a thought that he didn't have, let's say, that he didn't think that he's going to use this piece less than 3x3, and Rabbi Huda is saying we should take into consideration that he could think that, and therefore we make it Makabel Tumah, and here we're talking about the other way around, where he had a thought that blocked it from being Makabel Tumah, namely that he plans to trim it, and Rabbi Huda is saying, nevertheless, for this purpose, we can ignore his thought and treat it as if he hadn't had that thought and say that the fact is it would have been Roy the Kabbal Tumah if it hadn't been for his thought. And therefore, we can draw an analogy from that to other cases, to a skin which hasn't been processed at all. That's the same idea that we don't have to consider what machshava may be. We can consider that he could have a machshava to use it as it is, and therefore that it's already growing the Kabbal Tumah. And the Gemara says on this last point about what Rava is saying about an utzva that you have in mind to trim, v'ha tanya, and indeed thus we learn in a braisa, Rav Shimon ben Menasseh Omer. Utzba shechoshav alei ala kotner, if you have a spread, a mat like this that you plan to trim, tohira ad shiyaksiyana, then it's tar, it's not makabel tumah, until he trims it, or until he's mevatel his machshava. Until he decides to use it as is. So we see from that braisa, Rav Shimon ben Menasseh, we see the point that Rava is making, that you could have that an utzba by default, usually an utzba would not be trimmed, and would be makabel tumah as soon as it's made. Versus, you could have a case where a person does specifically decide that he plans to trim it first, and then it's not makabel tumah till then. So again, where Rabbi Yehuda will say we're going to ignore that extra machshava of his and focus on the fact that an utzva usually, by default, would be makabel tumah as soon as it's made, and the same thing, skin can be makabel tumah as soon as it's snipped off the animal. Whereas Rabbi Lazar disagrees with that. Rabbi Lazar said focus on the fact of what he actually thought. To the utzva that he actually plans to trim it, in the case of the skin that he thought that he does plan to process it further and not use it as it is. Okay,
so that could apply to a beged if you've completed a beged.
That Rav Lazar and Rav Yehuda are deriving from the word beged. They're each in their own way deriving from the word beged. That these dinim apply also to skin. The difference is only the difference is only that Rabbi Yehuda is focusing on something which is in the future roi l'kabel tumah, and Rabbi Lazar is saying it has to be something which now is makabel tumah. They both agree that we are learning from a beged to a skin.
Does it only apply from a beged to a skin, or it applies from a beged to other types of?
So that's what we said before. According to the Buddha, we're learning from a beged to a skin. And of course, there was a learning from a beged of wool or linen to other types of gadim, other types of fabric. So he would say, fine, skin that's already been processed and is already makabel tumah, fine, can come in under that as well. We don't have to distinguish. We're going to hold that distinction.
The what?
Rabbi Yehuda does hold of that distinction.
Between a baguette and something else.
I mean, Rabbi Yehuda does hold of that distinction between even Roy Lakal Tuma is enough for kibbutz to apply to it, because he says, just like you can find cases of a peged which is not yet Makabal Tuma, but which is Roy to as long as you have a different Makshava, or as long as you can't say the Makshava there was.
But that only applies to peged, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it applies to...
That's the thing. Rabbi Yehuda is saying, just like I can find for you a peged, which is not Makabal Tuma, but is capable of being provided you have the provided that the machshava is appropriate. Again, let's say with a beggar less than 3x3 that he plans to use it, or with a or with a beggar that he plans to embroider that he changes his mind and decides not to embroider it, etc. The same way, Rabbi Yehuda is going to say the same thing with the skin. Whereas Rabbi Lazar is going to say, I don't accept that. Right now is Makabal Tuma, without any further machshava or anything, and therefore the skin has to be the same thing. The halacha, the Rambam passing like Rabbi Yehuda, although it's kind of odd, because in the Mishnah, the notation with the ches over there, the little ches over there, by Ein Mishpat Ne'er Mitzvah, is actually on the word Ein Eton Kibbutz, which is Rabbi Lazar's opinion, which seems to be a misprint or something, because if you look in the Rambam in Hilchot Ma'aseh HaKorbanos, he does pass him like Rabbi Yehuda. Moving on, the Mishnah said, Ein Ton Kibbutz Chula. We said the only part of the beggar that has to be washed in the Azorah is the part where the blood actually splashed on. You don't actually have to wash, you don't have to wash the entire beggar in the Azorah. Where do we know that from? You would think if blood splashed on part of a piece of clothes, you would think the whole thing is washed. Therefore, the test says that splash, whatever it'll splash on. Boy, about you, I will knock on down on that place for the actual splash. And you actually have twice in the positive.
I'm losing you. I'm losing you. Can you hear?
Yeah.
Okay, Talmud Leymar.
Ashi Yizeh, that will splash, that wherever it should splash, which means that we restrict the din only to where it acts, only to the place where it actually splashed. The Pasuk actually repeats the words Ashi Yizeh twice. It starts off Ashi Yizeh Midom Al Beged, if blood splashes on a beged, and then it continues Ashi Yizeh Al Beged, this that it splashed on, the Chavetz Makom Kadosh, should be washed in the holy place. So from that extra repetition of Ashi Yizeh, we learn only the place where it splashed is required to be washed. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, Dover Shur Roy the Kabbal Tumah, the whole of said rule of Kibbutz only applies which is Roy LeKabal Tuma. And we said three criteria. We said that it had, well actually we said two criteria. It has to be Roy LeKabal Tuma, be Roy LeKibbutz. So what's Roy LeKabal Tuma? As we said before, stomach of Rabbi Yehuda. We said before, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Lazar were arguing over the point of Roy LeKabal Tuma versus actually LeKabal Tuma. When the Mishnah uses the word Roy LeKabal Tuma, that implies that we have a Stam Mishnah like Rabbi Yehuda. And since the usual rule is that Machloikas Vach Kach Stam, we have a usual rule. If we have a Machloikas in the Mishnah, and later on we have a Stam Mishnah, according to the opinion, then the Halacha is like that Stam Mishnah, is like that opinion. So then, that means, in this case, the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda.
Right.
And when we said Rory Lekibus, when we said that the thing has to be suitable for washing, for laundering, that means, as opposed to if blood of a chatas lands on a keli, like a water or something, then then that's a different devout greeter move, because you don't do kibbutz to it, you don't wash it, you don't launder it like you would do a piece of cloth or leather or what have you. Instead, what you do is you scrape off you scrape off whatever got onto it. You don't flex it. You don't bend it back and forth like you do when you're laundering something. You scrape it off, whether it just is on the surface or whether it penetrated. So that's when the Mishnah said Roy the Kibbutz, it meant that. It meant that if blood of a hatha splashes on Kalim, then you don't have to do kibbutz to them. The Rambam actually learns that in that case you don't have to do kibbutz, but the Rambam learns that you still do have to scrape it off then. According to the Rambam, what we mean when we say Roy the Kibbutz is, if Roy the Kibbutz, then it requires Kibbutz. If it's not Roy the Kibbutz, you still have to remove the blood, but the process is not going to be Kibbutz, the process is going to be something else. It's going to involve scraping it off. And in fact, you have a chronin, Minchas Chinuch talks about that maybe then according to the Rambam, what it would be is, there would still be a difference. The Kibbutz of also leather or whatever has to be done in the Azara. Nothing else can be done anywhere.
The what can be done anywhere?
The scraping. Or again, according to the Rambam, if blood of a chatas, according to the Rambam, lands on something hard, like a keli or whatever, we just said that kibbutz isn't relevant to that. Kibbutz only applies to fabrics and other soft materials like that. But the Rambam still learned that. The Rambam still learned that you would have to scrape it off. So the Minchas Chinuch argues that the Rambam might hold that maybe we could say that it means the kibbutz was saying obviously has to be done in the Azara because it says so in the Pasuk, but the scraping, if you have something where the blood needs to be scraped off, that could be done outside the Azara. So now, continuing with the next part of the Mishnah, we said echad abdeged v'echad asakhola. We said a piece of clothing made out of regular cloth, a piece of sackcloth, or skin of an animal, all neutral. So now we're going to focus on that last one. We're going to focus on the skin, on the leather rather, because here we're talking about skin that was already tanned and made into leather, and we're going to focus on that and figure out about the applicability of kibbutz to that. We're actually going to get into a din in Hilchos Shabbos in this connection. So the Gemara says, "Lememra de Ur Bar Kibbutzu." Are you telling me from the Mishnah that leather is something to which kibbutz applies? That kibbutz applies to it. But again, we just said there's a difference between kibbutz versus grida, scraping. So our Mishnah said that a piece of leather, that the din of kibbutz would apply to it, and even Rav Elazar would agree to that, because once the skin has been tanned and processed, and whatever is supposed to be done to it has been done with it, then of course it's the Pavel Truma, and Rav Elazar agrees that the din of kibbutz applies to it. But the Gemara is attacking that question, that the Gemara is attacking that premise altogether. What do you mean that leather is something to which kibbutz is relevant? Or a minu, the Gemara says, I have a contradiction from a Mishnah in Shabbos. Mishnah says, Hoysa all of the shleshes, if you have a pillow, and if you have, on Shabbos, you have a pillow, and there's lishleshes on it. Lishleshes means filthy stuff. It could be dirt, it could be excrement, it could be, Rashi says it could be saliva, whatever it is, something disgusting. You can wipe it off using a rag. The point is, you can only wipe it off with a rag. You can't pour water on it to get rid of it, because that would be a malacha of mechabit. Because we're talking about a cloth pillow. And cloth, if you soak it in water on Shabbos, then you're doing the malacha of kibbutz, the malacha of laundering, which is a tolda of the malacha of malabit. In the Mishkan, they did malabit. They had to bleach. They had to bleach the fabrics that they're the wool and the linen that they're going to use for the coverings and whatnot of the Mishkan. So therefore, one of the 39 other malachas is malabin, is bleaching or otherwise washing something, and it's told of that as bleaching, and it's told of that as a habit which is washing something. So therefore, if you were to pour water on the, if you were to put water on the pillow, or soak it in water or whatever to get rid of the lishleshes, then you would be over on an admalacha. So you can't do that. So all you can do is wipe it off with a dry rag. On the other hand, hoisa al shalur, if this same lishleshes was on a leather pillow, then nosin al ma'im achikich, then you can pour water on it until the lishleshes goes away. Meaning, in other words, now, so now what's the point? With cloth, we're saying you can't even pour water on it, because that would be mechavis. With leather, we're saying you could pour water on it. So evidently, kibbutz does not apply to leather. So what are you telling me in our Mishnah? That if blood of chatas lands on a piece of leather, then you have to do kibbutz. As far as l'shleshes, by the way, I forgot to mention, Tosfos brings from the Oroch that it means a specific kind of filth. The Oroch says, Soyas Tarnagolin, chicken coop, specifically. Why you would find that on a pillow more than any other kind of filth that Rashi mentioned, I don't know. But anyway. Okay, so that's the thing. And our Mishnah implies that you can do kibbutz to leather the same way as you would do to cloth, but we see from that Mishnah in Shabbos that not. Because just pouring water on cloth is enough to be kibbutz, but pouring water on leather is not. Amar Abaye. Right. People keep on getting more. All right. So to continue, Amar Abaye by Kasha. You could say that our Mishnah versus the Mishnah and Shabbos are two different opinions. You have the opinion of the Rabbanon and you have the opinion of Acherim, which, as we learned at the end of Parvias, usually Acherim means Rebbeinu. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, Habeget v'hasak mechavsoi, we learn in a Braisa that a piece of cloth or a piece of sackcloth, if blood of a chatas lands on it, then you have to do kibbutz. You do the same process with water and chemicals that we're going to learn later on in the Parvias. But on the other hand, if the blood lands on a hard, on a keli, or on a piece of leather, then you don't do kibbutz, instead you scrape it off. So that's the chachamim. Acherim oimrim, and acherim say, no, habdeget v'asak v'orim chavsoi, that no, all three, a piece of clothing, or a piece of sackcloth, or a piece of leather, all of them chavsoi, all of them you launder them, you do kibbutz. And only in the case of a keli do you scrape it off. So you see that the chachamim and acherim argue whether leather is capable of having kibbutz done to it. So very well then, Abaye says, so our Mishnah which says that leather is capable of having kibbutz done to it is according to acherim. The Mishnah in Shabbos which says that leather is not capable of having kibbutz done to it, and therefore you can pour water on the leather pillow until the lishleshes goes away, that would be according to the chachamim.
That's the physical capability, nothing to do with Shabbos.
Well, in other words, the question would be, is leather a material that is subject to kibbutz? The Chachamim would hold no. Therefore, they would say in Shabbos, you can pour water on the leather and not be over on the malacha. And Rabbeir, whatever, would disagree and say that leather is also subject to kibbutz. So he would say in our Mishnah, therefore, you do have to do kibbutz to the leather if blood fell on it. And in the case of Shabbos, Rabbeir would disagree with the Mishnah over there and say you can't pour water on the leather pillow. Okay. So the Gemara says, fine, in that case, if you can understand it that way, then which of these opinions does it go like? This that Rav Chiba Ashi says, Zimnin Sagin, and many times, have a Ka'imna Tamed Rav. I was standing as a Talmud in front of Rav, because Rav was his Rebbe, so he would stand there to serve him, serving a Talmud Chacham is greater than learning under him. So Rav Chiba Ashi would be serving Rav as a Talmud serves his Rebbe. And Rav Chiya Ba'ava says, the Shachshichi Reim Asani Levaya. And I would rinse his shoes in water on Shabbos. Now, shoes are made out of leather. So therefore, we see, so who was that like? Kaman. Which of these two opinions would be that be like? To Rabbanon. That would have to be according to the Rabbanon, because according to the mayor, since he says, if we're saying that our Mishnah that's saying that leather is subject to kibbutz, if we're saying our Mishnah is according to the mayor, that means according to the mayor, you can't rinse. You can't rinse a leather shoe on Shabbos the same way as he would say that over here that you have to do kibbutz to the leather that blood fell on because leather is subject to kibbutz just as much as cloth. So this that Rabbi Ba'ashi is saying, therefore, would have to be specifically according to the Rabbana. However, Amar Rava, so Rava says, no, Umi Ikalaman the Amar or Lav Bar Kibbutzu. What are you talking about, Abaya? Do you really think that there's any, do you think, is there really anybody who says that that leather is not subject to kibbutz, is not something that kibbutz could apply to? I'll show you a pasuk. You have a pasuk describing saras on clothing, where you have, there's a different possibilities over there, where the saras, the beggar has to be quarantined, and the Koyan checks it, and if the saras spreads, then it has to be burned, and in some cases, there are cases where the saras has to be cut out of the beggar, and so on and so forth. And then you have a case, the pasuk says, that beggar oyashsihoy oedav oikopsihor, the beggar, or the chessy or edav thread, which are the warp and woof threads that are used to weave cloth, all those things are capable of getting saras regarding on them. Or a leather garment, or a leather keli, whatever, that you wash it, that you wash it, and the saras disappears. So then the pasuk says you have to dip them in the mikveh and they're tahor. So we see, and then the pasuk uses the word techabes. So you see, obviously, that kibbutz applies to leather. So you, Abaye, are telling me that you have the Chachamim and Acherim arguing whether kibbutz applies to leather. So the pasuk says that kibbutz applies to leather. So that's what the pasuk says. If you do kibbutz on leather and chaff goes away from it, then that's it. You dip it in the mikveh and it's tahor. So no, we can't say that there's machloikus whether kibbutz applies to leather. There's no question Rava says kibbutz applies to leather. Ela, Amar Rava, so Rava says no. Kro umasnisa berakim. The Mishnah, the pasuk about saras, and our Mishnah about washing a piece of leather that blood splashed on, are talking about berakim. They're talking about soft leather. Soft leather, everybody agrees you could do kibbutz too. Ki pligi bekashin, bekashin. The machloikus of the Chachamim and Reb Meir would be about hard leather. So therefore, in other words, Rava says, Acherim, Reb Meir, are not necessarily going to argue with the Mishnah and Shabbos. They're not going to necessarily argue with the Mishnah and Shabbos. They would say that the Mishnah and Shabbos have to be talking about a hard leather pillow. So therefore, we're saying that you can pour water on it. Kibbutz wouldn't apply to it. And they wouldn't necessarily be disagreeing in our Mishnah either, because they would say that our Mishnah is talking about soft leather. So the Machloikus would be, they would argue about the Mishnah and Shabbos rather. We would say the Mishnah and Shabbos is talking about a hard leather pillow. So the Chachamim would say, fine, kibbutz doesn't apply to hard leather. Therefore you can go ahead and pour water on it and get rid of the lishleshes. And Reb Meir would disagree and say that kibbutz applies to that also. But not when it comes to soft leather. Okay, so now the question is, okay, but what about what Rav Chiya Ba'Abba just said, Rav Chiya Ba'Ashi rather, that many times I served Nav of the Talmud, and I used to rinse his shoes in water on Travis when they got dirty. So according to Rava, all soft leather, kibbutz applies to. So how could Rav Chiya Ba'Ashi do that? If you're going to say like Abaya, that Rav Meir and the Chachamim are arguing about soft leather, fine. Rav Chiya Ba'Ashi is holding like the Rabbana. But if you say that both the Rabbana and Acherim hold that soft leather is subject to kibbutz, then what's Rav Chiya Ba'Ashi doing? The answer is the caution of the Rabbana. The answer is okay. We'd be talking about that the shoes. Rav's shoes that Rav Chiya Ba'Ashi washed, rinsed in water, are not soft leather shoes, they're hard leather shoes. Well, we just said, according to Rav, that a hard leather, Acherim and the Rabbanon would disagree on. So Rav Chiya Ba'Ashi can still be going after the Rabbanon and saying, okay, hard leather is not subject to kibbutz, therefore I can go ahead and rinse them and rinse dirty shoes on Shabbos. Okay. But then, Hada Amar Rava, then Rava changed his mind and said, no, Lav Milta Hida Ami, what I said is not correct. Because are we gonna have to go and say regarding the pasuk the chiktivan the rak and chiktivan that when the pasuk talks about washing a piece of something that had saras on it that it's davka talking about soft leather? Why? Who says the pasuk doesn't specify one way or the other, hard or soft? So where are you getting such a distinction from? So Rava is saying that it can't be that there's a distinction between hard and soft leather, because then that we'd be forced to say the pasuk is talking about only soft leather and not necessarily. Because Rava says, "Mi loya skinan b'klei akslagia haboyim and vinesigam." After all, can't we? The pasuk could equally well be talking about utensils of akslagia. Akslagia is basically where they take the leather and they make it. They boil it and make it very hard. So haboyim and vinesigam, where such things come from overseas. The pasuk just says klei ha'ur. The pasuk says over and over, and that's spoken over there as I call klei ha'ur, oy ba'or. So the pasuk doesn't specify. So Rava says that being the case, the pasuk could be talking about soft leather, sure, but it could equally be talking about these klei akslagia, this hard boiled leather, and yet the pasuk is using the word dechabes on it. So therefore, we would have to assume that kibbutz applies to hard leather also. And the pasuk says that kibbutz is still required, even on hard leather. So no, Rava says you can't say that there's a distinction between hard and soft leather. Ela, Amar Rava, so Rava says, you know what? There still can be a certain distinction between hard and soft, because what we can do is like this. Since the saras comes from within the beged itself, the saras is not some external thing. Saras is not like a mold or something that develops where some external thing lands on the kavi. It's something that develops from within the kavi itself. They have the famous thing that Rambam says that the famous thing that Hashem first wounds a person by causing saras to develop on their house, and if they don't pay attention then on their clothing, if they don't pay attention then on themselves. But the saras is not something external, it's something that develops from within the house, or in this case, from within the kavi itself. So therefore, Rava says, it has a certain effect on the kavi. It penetrates through the leather, it softens the leather, it weakens it, and it makes it effectively soft leather, it makes it permeable. So therefore, Rava says, we can still accept the distinction between hard and soft. The pasuk, when the pasuk mentions leather kalim, it doesn't matter if they could be hard, they could be soft. We don't have to say that the pasuk is specifically talking about soft leather kalim. It could be talking about these clay akslagia. But once they develop saras, then that itself, the area where the saras is, becomes soft. So therefore, the pasuk can use the word kibbutz on it. So therefore, we can still say that the machlokes between acherim and the chachamim still is regarding hard leather. So where the leather didn't develop saras, but rather is just regular leather that has l'shleshes on it, or in this case that has gamchatos on it. We would have the argument where the chachamim would say that kibbutz still applies to it, and Meir would say that it doesn't. But Rava continues, Amar Rava, e kashali ha kashali. Okay, but if I still have a kasha in this, and my problem with this whole solution is as follows. Before, we mentioned the Mishnah in Shabbos about pillows. Now, pillows and cushions usually are soft. You don't usually have a pillow made out of clay oxide. You don't have a pillow made out of boiled leather. So, at Utsnan, and yet the Mishnah that we learned before said about a leather pillow, that if you have the shleshes on a leather pillow, then you can pour water on it until it disappears. So therefore, Rava says, so I can't accept then that the machloekas that I can't accept then after all that everybody would agree that soft leather is subject to kibbutz. If soft leather is subject to kibbutz, that has to be the kind of leather that the pillow is made out of, because nobody makes pillows out of hard leather. So therefore, what are we talking about? Ella, Omar Rava, so no, Rava says, I'll give a different explanation. Kol kibbutz, the less like kiskus, loishne kibbutz. When you have kibbutz, it means laundering, but laundering something also involves scrubbing it. Rubbing one part of it against the other part. So therefore, Rava says, if you don't do that, then that's not called kibbutz. So now in the Mishnah, in Shabbos, you're not rubbing any part of the pillow against the other. All you're doing is pouring water on the stain over there until it goes away. That's fine. That's not kibbutz. As opposed to, well, the Gemara is going to ask soon in that case, why doesn't that apply to cloth? But right now, they're always saying, when it comes in general, the concept of kibbutz implies not only applying water or detergent or what have you, it also involves rubbing one part of it against the other, or maybe rubbing it against something else. So therefore, you have no problem with that because you're not actually rubbing any part of the pillow. And therefore, the Amr of Chiyah Ba'ashi, this that Chiyah Ba'ashi said, Zimn and Sagir have a Ka'im the Kamei de Rav, but there were many times I was standing in front of Rav, the Shachshikav in the Sonei de Baya, and I would rinse his shoes in water on Shabbos, implying Shich Shuch Ein Abba Kibbutz Loi, only that he could rinse them, but he couldn't do kibbutz on them. That would be, now we have two possibilities. Now Rav says we have two ways of understanding the story. Either we're talking about they were soft leather shoes, not like we thought before, Davka, they had to be leather, they had to be hard leather. They could be soft leather, and then Kedivrei Hakel, then what Rav Chiya Ba'ashi is saying is according to everybody, because even Acherim would agree that you can't do kibbutz with them, all you can do is rinse them with water. Either Kashin, Rav Acherim, or specifically we were talking about hard leather shoes, and we're talking according to Acherim, because Acherim would say that if you were to rub them, then that would be kibbutz and it would be awesome. Whereas the Chachamim would disagree. With hard ones, they would say with hard ones, even you rub one part of it against the other, that would be considered kibbutz. So when Rav Chiya Ba'ashi Rava is giving the definition. Kibbutz means not only putting water and or other cleansing agents on the thing that you're washing, but also rubbing one part of it against the other. So Rava is saying, therefore, when Rav Chiya Ba'ashi says that I only rinsed Rav's shoes, implying he didn't do anything else, he didn't rub one part of them against the other. So there's two ways of understanding. Either we should say that, so in other words, he didn't do kibbutz. So either it means the shoes were soft leather, and then that means both the Chachamim and Rav Meir and Acherim are going to say that kibbutz applies to soft leather, therefore he couldn't do kibbutz, all he could do is rinse them. Or we're talking about their hard shoes, and therefore he was going according to the Meir, he was going according to the Acherim, because according to the Chachamim, you could say, if they're hard leather, then you'd even be allowed to rub one part against the other, because hard leather, they would say, is not subject to kibbutz. So if Rav Chiya Ba'ashi is not doing that, if he's only rinsing them and not rubbing them, and we assume that they're hard shoes, then that would mean he was going according to Acherim. And by the way, that is the halacha. If your shoes get dirty on Shabbos, you are allowed to pour water on them to get rid of the dirt, but you're not allowed to rub them against anything. You're not allowed to rub them against each other or scrape them on something or whatever, because that would be kibbutz. So Gemara asks, Ihochi, well, if you're going to go like that, if you're going to say that kibbutz implies rubbing one part against the other, beget nami, and the same thing should apply to cloth. And yet the Mishnah tells us at Shabbos that if it was a cloth pillow, you can't pour water on it, all you can do is rub it with a dry rag, what's the difference? The answer is beget shriyasa zeru kibbutz, because with cloth, you have yet another thing. With cloth, you don't need rubbing for it to be considered kibbutz. Just getting it wet with water is already considered washing. So therefore, in other words, according to rubber, you have three different cases. You have cloth, where even just getting it wet is already considered kibbutz. Then you have soft leather, where you need to both get it wet and what do you call it, and rub it, one forward against the other, for it to be considered kibbutz. And then you have a hard leather, where it's machlokes, of the rabbanon and acherim, what would be considered kibbutz with it. According to the chachamim, same thing, getting it wet and rubbing it. And according to the mayor, that would be according to the mayor, according to acherim, getting wet, getting hard leather wet and rubbing it, according to acherim, would also be considered kibbutz. Whereas according to the chachamim, there's no such thing as kibbutz when it comes to hard leather. Even if you were to wash it and rub it, it still wouldn't be considered kibbutz, they would say. So those are the three distinctions.
So the Chachamim would say that the hard leather, there's no kibbutz.
Right.
Whatever the
right. Well, that's what
we're
saying. That's right.
Isn't it still the din
of Shabbos? Yeah, that would be the din of Shabbos, therefore, that if your shoes get dirty on Shabbos, and your shoes are not hard leather, your shoes are soft leather, because they're meant to fit your foot, then you can put water on them to get rid of the dirt. Or the mud or what have you. You can't scrape them against anything or rub them against each other or rub them with anything because that would be kibbutz.
So how do you put the water on it?
How do you
if you're not rubbing it? You just
right,
like...
You put the water on it, you just pour water on it. You just pour water and then
you
let it...
You just pour
the
water. You can't rub it with a napkin
right.
and water.
Right.
Well, you can rub exactly. it with a napkin without water.
Yeah, that's probably also true, yeah. That might be a little tricky. But rubbing leather b'chlal might be a different malacha of mamachet, of smoothing out leather. So that might be a different issue. I know, for example, they talk about, you know, sometimes you see in front of old buildings, old pools and whatnot, you see this little thing built into the ground to scrape the mud off your boots before you come in. So you know, they say you're not allowed to do that on Shabbos. Because that would be mamachet. So even though no water is involved, just rubbing against that can be an issue. But okay, so one more thing before we stop. Tosfos brings up a point that sometimes you can even have that getting cloth wet is not considered kibbutz. Namely, Tosfos says, I mean, you can wipe your hands on a towel on Shabbos, even though you're getting a towel wet. That's not kibbutz. So how does that work? So Tosfos distinguishes between there is putting water on cloth. Derech kibbutz in a way of cleansing it, which is, as we said, a tolda malabin, versus getting the cloth wet, derech kinuf, in a way of getting it dirty. So like wiping your hands on a towel, or like Tosfos brings an example, for example, or the elsewhere, the Gemara talks about that a nida is able to tovel wearing her clothes on Shabbos. Aye, she's getting the clothes wet. No, because that's not considered kibbutz, because they're on her body, so they're not actually getting clean from going with her into the mikveh. So that's another distinction also between derech lichmul and derech and not. So if you're getting the cloth wet, derech lichmul, then you have a heter to do that, which is how we're able to dry our hands on towels on Shabbos and similar things.
Oh, good thing.
Yeah.
Okay, shkayach.
Okay, shkayach everyone, and I should be back tomorrow, Bez Hashem.
Near to Shem.
Okay, Shem.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.